This is a joint work with Rob and Justin, who are both in the room, so if you have questions, you can also ask them. And the title is deliberately tongue-in-cheek. For extreme parallelism, your OS is so last millennium. Apart from the little government disclaimer, this is partly funded by DARPA for the UHPC project. This is not about Intel products, so don't infer anything or about Intel roadmaps from this talk. This is purely experimental research. All right, there we go. Sorry. So the outline, I'll start with the backdrop on a little background on Exascale, then present the Runnymede project, which is the USPC project at Intel. This talk is not specifically about this project, but we used it as a motivation for what we're doing, so I'll refer to some of these things, some of the points in this project. Then I'll talk about three design decisions for what we think a new OS should be for Exascale, and then where we can go from here. So Exascale, everyone knows that if you give more computing to people, they will actually do something with it. So we want to go to an exaflop and do more climate simulation, more research on DNA and all that stuff. So the problem is that if you continue with current trends, one Exascale machine will require 530 megawatts, which is pretty much a nuclear power plant. So you would have to build your computer, your nuclear power plant, and then start doing experiments. It's not extremely doable. So this is not feasible, so what can we do about it? Well, one of the things that we have attacked with the UHPC project is to try to lower the energy for exascale machines, and we have specifically looked at how we can do this in operating systems, or how we can allow the operating systems to improve. So currently, operating systems have these following design philosophies. They try to abstract away the hardware so that the programmer programs to a common API and doesn't have to worry about the underlying hardware. And they ensure fairness, isolation between processes, security, all these other things that people care about. This has really worked well for current applications because developers could just write their application for this OS and it would work on whatever hardware the OS was running on. They didn't have to worry about the nitty-gritty of a memory management, threading, scheduling, and all that stuff. And they could just benefit from hardware getting better and better. The OS would just take care of improving their application for them as well. Problem is that this is not really adapted for Exascale. And the reason, or one of the key reasons, is that Exascale really requires visibility into the hardware for energy efficiency reasons. You really need to know where your memory is. We'll see that one of the big costs of energy in Exascale is not so much doing the computation. It's really moving the data from where it's located in your machine to where you want it to do a computation on. Moving bits is actually really expensive. You also want to know where these tasks are scheduled or are executing. You don't just want to know threads. You want to know really what your computation is doing and where it is on the machine. Again, for energy reasons, you want it close to your data. So Exascale doesn't have the same, furthermore, Exascale doesn't have the same concerns as a traditional OS does. It doesn't have a restricted number of computing resources. Most traditional OS deals with machines that have 1, 2, maybe 4, 8 processors that you can run in parallel. Exascale machine has a whole bunch of processors that are running around, and you don't need to share them. You don't really need to manage them in the same way. And communication is really expensive. Current OSs don't really deal with communication. They don't even see it. They just see there's a memory and a processor. They don't know how far away it is in most cases. So briefly, the Runnymede project, this is a very, very high-level view of the what the machine looks like. It's kind of a hierarchical machine where you have two types of engines, two types of processors. The CEs, which is the, I don't know what color that is, violet color, is a general-purpose processor. And then you have a whole bunch of little tiny compute engines, which are the XEs. And then there are arranged in a hierarchy, so you have this in a block, which are composed, and they go in the hierarchy. And similarly, you have memory that is associated with the execution engines, and then you have memory higher up in the hierarchy. So you have a hierarchy of memory as well. So that's pretty much all you need to know for this talk about this project. There's a lot more on it, but that's all that's relevant here. For the software side, We have a programming model that's based on something that's called codelets, which was developed by the University of Delaware by Professor Gao. And codelets are pretty much very small chunk of codes, and they have data flow-like dependencies between them. So the main principle is that they run uninterrupted on these execution engines, and they fire when their dependencies are met, so they start executing. And as they're executing, they'll satisfy other codeless dependencies, which will then fire off. It's a very traditional data flow-like model where the dependencies can be either data or they can be control where you depend on a previous execution of a previous codelet. So the hypotheses that we've made for this system is that exascale system will require fine-grained event-driven execution model, which, like codelets, basically. Will also require a sophisticated observation of what's happening on the machine, both in terms of where things are executing, what the environment of the machine looks like, what has failed, what hasn't, what the temperatures of the machine is, so that you can move things around to keep it running, et cetera. And adaptation techniques to respond to these observations and actually do something about it. So that was the background of the talk. Now I'll talk specifically about three design decision points about why we think current OSs should be changed for exascale. The first point is the traditional separation of concerns between the kernel and the user code. So traditionally, you have resources that are shared between your kernel and user code, and you have to context switch in and out from them. And this is done on the same core. Your user code is executing, makes a system call, swaps out to the kernel. Kernel does something, comes back out to you. This is pretty expensive in terms of context switching, because you have to enter the kernel and then come back out. And you can reduce that, but you still have that overhead somewhere. And it doesn't take into account the differences between what the type of computation the kernel is doing and what the type of computation you as the user code is doing. So what we propose is instead of separating them on a temporal basis, you separate them on a spatial basis. So you have some cores that are just doing OS-like things, the CEs in our case, and the others that are just doing the application code, the user code. So now you don't have any context switching overhead because you don't have to context switch. The XCs would tell the CE, hey, I need something from you, and then they could go to sleep. You wouldn't have to actually context switch or anything like that. And furthermore, you could actually specialize the CEs to do things just for the OS. So in our case, you need a lot of queue processing because you have a lot of scheduling. So the CEs could have some special atomic operations and things like that that would allow them to manage queues much better. Whereas the XCs could be specialized for energy efficiency, and they could have custom functionality as you need for your application. You could have square root operations or sine, cosine, combine operations, or different things like that, exponentials, whatever you want, depending on whatever applications you need to run. The next point I'm going to talk about is memory management. So traditionally, the OS manages everything and kind of tries to abstract away things. A big invention that has helped a lot of people is virtual memory, and it abstracts away the actual memory layout, the RAM, whatever it is, you don't know about it. All you know about is pages. The heap that's allocated is also done in a completely architecture agnostic manner, except for some NUMA things, but mostly you just say malloc and you get back a pointer, and that's what you use it with, and you have no idea where this pointer is located. You know that it's somewhere in RAM, you don't know where. And they're not adapted for that. And the last point is that the storage hierarchies, so your different levels of RAM, are not necessarily adapted to your application. You have a fixed size hardware for any application that you run. You have a fixed, whatever it is, 64K L1 and then L2 and L3, and you can't change that. So there's a huge loss of visibility into both the granularity of what you're allocating and the locality of where you're allocating, which is going to be expensive in terms of memory. So why is this visibility important? Well, granularity, the first point that I brought up, was that you want to optimize what you allocate to the size of your, what the object that your application needs. You don't necessarily need it in page sizes. Not everything fits in a page, and not everything fills up a page. You want something that can move around, potentially, smaller than a page. And then the location, you want the programmer to be able to say, look, I want this memory to be closer to me because I'm going to be using it a lot. Or you want something to say this. and to reduce communication, access costs, and everything. And then you want also the programmer or the compiler or whatever to be able to say, OK, now I'm done with this. You can move it out or something like that. You want more control on both of this. And another big point of why visibility is important is we want to enable other types of memories, not just cached memories. What could you do with scratch pads, for example? So what we propose is basically to make data first-class objects. So in our system, the runtime tracks the objects that are allocated, and they can be moved around at an object level, not at a page level or anything. So basically, you can allocate and say, I want this object to be allocated close to me right now. I'm going to be using it. Then your computation uses it. When it's done using it, it says, OK, I'm done. Then the runtime can take that object, move it somewhere further away when it's no longer in use, and move something back in that's needed now. Or even more, when one codelet is done with the object, it will move to wherever the next codelet is executing because that other codelet needs it. So you could have things like that basically the data objects themselves, not the pages, not anything else, will be moved around, garbage collected, and everything in a way that you minimize energy usage. When I say garbage collection, by the way, I don't necessarily mean an automatic, full-fledged Java-like garbage collection which stops the world and is energy inefficient and expensive. Just principles of moving things around and like that. And memory management will collaborate with the task scheduling to figure out where it should place the memory with respect to the tasks that are using it, since the codelet model has the notion of dependencies between tasks and data. Next one I'll talk about is threading abstractions. So one of the big things that we want to avoid wasting energy is context switching. It's inefficient. You have to save a whole bunch of state and then swap it back in, rewrite it. Very expensive. We also want to avoid binding tasks or threads to specific hardware resources in a hard manner, because the environment will change. You may have resources that go offline and come back online. You may have different constraints that happen. You may want to be operating in energy efficient mode for a while, then you want to do a computation really fast. So you want this to be pretty flexible. And you really want your thread and your data to be in the same place. One thing that we found with this project is that frequently it may be less expensive to actually recompute the data than actually moving it around. Because computing, especially if you do like near threshold voltage computations and stuff like that, is cheap. Moving data around, you still have to pay for the bits going across the wire, and you have to push them along, and that's expensive. So what do we propose? We propose fine-grained asynchronous task parallelism. So don't tie parallel tasks to resources, but we make affinity relationships explicit, we make explicit dependencies, and then we let a runtime kind of figure out where to put things around. So by exposing this affinity, the programmer can precisely schedule tasks and say these tasks are together, so they will be scheduled together in a close-knit fashion. And the runtime will adapt to these things. So all this is, these are not explicitly completely new ideas, but we want to reuse them at an OS level. I mean, if you look at TBB, they have task graphs, which are very similar to this. You also have something like, in Habanero, data-driven futures, which are similar, which express dependencies between tasks. And so you can say, OK, all these kind of go together. They operate in the same data. So in summary, current OS design goals are, in our opinion, misaligned with exascale goals. They have no visibility, which is the main goal for exascale. And what we want to do is we want to replace the OS with a lightweight runtime to strip out any unnecessary OS features, virtual memory, a whole bunch of scheduling things that are not required for exascale, and really specifically focus on exascale goals, which is energy efficiency and resiliency and responding to failures and things like that. So in our system, we provide low-level interfaces to expose certain key architectural aspects, like where the memory is, where what the hierarchies are like, et cetera, so that they're relevant for energy. And so that's what the programmer cares about in exascale. So where do we go from here? Well, four things. The first one is about what can we do at a compiler level. So we're looking at all these different things to help the OS, or now the runtime, lightweight runtime, work better. So there's a lot of stuff that's lost in the compiling tool chain that when OSs were, traditional OSs didn't really care about, but in Exascale, you may actually care about it because the compiler does actually a lot of work, and it does a lot. It makes a lot of decisions that are based on some heuristics that it has, but the machine may know better at runtime what is actually the state of the machine that's running on. So for example, if you do a whole bunch of loop unrolling, or you select a certain level of loop unrolling, that's a decision that the compiler did, but the machine may decide that, well, a different level of loop unrolling is better for me at this point. So if the compiler would output this type of information, say, look, here's a binary with this level of loop unrolling that has these characteristics, here's another binary that has these other characteristics, then at runtime, the runtime can say, well, for me right now, this is the best one, and pick that one. And there's other things that the user can say, like, for example, I'm using this data here, I've stopped using it, and things like that, that are lost when things are compiled. And it would be helpful, probably, for the runtime to be able to have this type of information. So if we can get more stuff through the compiler, that would be probably great. The other thing is, how do we can use cores? Like I said, we have a whole bunch of cores in these Exascale systems. A lot of them are not necessarily needed for work all the time. So we can explore other uses for the cores. One of the things is you could do just-in-time tuning to what your computation is, kind of change it a little bit. You could do some that would explore different options. Like, for example, if the compiler emitted different options for a particular piece of code, you could try it on different parts of the machine and figure out which one is running better, and then expand that to every other part of the machine. You could dedicate some cores to do better scheduling, to explore other possibilities, and just say, OK, you're just doing scheduling for this time being and not use them for computation. How could we correctly mix the number of cores? That what we're looking at is how many of these Cs do you need, how many of these Xs do you need, how many can handle each other properly, things like that. Another thing that we haven't talked about in this talk, but that we're actually interested in as well, is observation. So what can we do to observe the machine, and how can it impact scheduling decisions of the machine? So how are the codelets interacting with each other? That's something that would be interesting to know, because this pattern may repeat later on. And if we know what the pattern is ahead of time, we can optimize for it. And how can we accommodate for different changes in the machine, like something gets really hot on one end? What can we do to move things around? So all this type of observation and acting on it is one thing that we want to look for. And then last is improving data and task scheduling. Again, the key goal is we want to reduce communication because it's really, really, really expensive. And so we want to try to look at heuristics of how to place data and how to place code and how to move them around potentially if a decision went wrong. How do you move the code around? How do you move the data around once it's executing so that you can get better efficiency? And is it worth it? And other goals for why you would want to do this: distribute heat, recover from errors, and other things that only appear in Exascale machine. And that's about it, I think. Yep, I'm in time. Thank you.
So if there are any clarification questions, ask those now. Otherwise, we'll save the discussion questions for later in the department.
So it sounds like you're arguing more for getting rid of the illusion of having a big global address space and less for an OS change. I guess I'm trying to figure out how you program this thing.
So actually, no. In our system, we actually do have a global address space, but the visibility of where things are is made explicit in this address space. So we're not necessarily saying you need to get rid of the address space, that you can still do it as long as you have visibility in it. So there's some form of contract between the programmers, the runtime, and everything that says, okay, this is the visibility in this machine.
You'd set tags on regions of memory saying pinned into this cache, or that the hardware would just tell you, hey, it's in this cache right now, or how's that?
So you're still thinking with traditional RAM cache and all that stuff, but what I was saying here is that think of it more in a NUMA fashion, in the sense that you have memory that's close to me physically, and then memory that's far from me. It doesn't have to be cache or anything like that. It's just physically it's close to where I am doing my computation, and some other memory is far away.
There'd be instructions that tell the hardware to push data around on the memory bus without getting the CPU involved. Is that how to think about it?
Yeah, there's things like that, and but the key thing is really you know how physically far the memory is, which is what you care about.
Do you have a specific design proposal for the what I would call the reflection process of this, which is how can if the application program is reflecting on its own behavior, how does it allocate? How does it understand the accounting of what caused what power to get used or whatever? Where did, you know, the decision may have been in the design time or it may have been the last instruction. You know, is there a way to express causality in something?
So I'm not completely sure I get the entire question, but if you're asking about how we would know, you know, how the a program would know what part of it is using more energy and try to figure out what caused it.
I'm actually thinking, how does the system observing program behavior, which might be either the application program or the operating system, can answer the question, if I tweak this thing, whether it's unrolling a loop or whatever, it will make a significant overall decrease in power consumption.
So we haven't completely specifically looked at that yet. That's something that we want to do, but we haven't looked at it. One thing that, I mean, well, the obvious one obvious answer is, let's try it and see what happens. And you then make a decision, oh, this didn't work, and then the next time you make a different decision. But I'm sure we could come up with certain heuristics that, I mean, especially the compiler, when it produces these different types of code, could actually say, this is the instruction mix that I'm producing for this. And with different power models, you could say this instruction mix will probably produce this type of power and things like that. But